Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm Sam Payne, your host. You know, if you're like me, you want to do good in the world. You want to make a difference. But also, if you're like me, you wonder what one single person can do in a world where so much difference must be made. We got a couple of stories for you today that speak in kind of an unusual way, maybe, to that notion, that even someone who feels small can have an impact, for better or for worse. In our first story, West Virginia tall tale teller Bill Lepp tells a kind of a rollicking story about a vacation trip with his family and with his pal, Skeeter, where Bill learns a lesson from his mischievous German grandfather, his Grosspapa, and also from his mom. Here's Bill Lepp with a story he calls Bill and Skeeter Break the Ocean.
When I was a kid, I was little. I didn't break 6 feet or 100 pounds until I was a freshman in high school. And as a result of that, or to go along with that, I was bad at everything. I'd walk into my sister's room, my closest sibling in age, and on one wall, there was nothing but blue ribbons from the swim team that she had been on, with a few red ribbons thrown in, where she had been on a relay team with some weak sister who had never been seen since. And then on another wall, there was nothing but trophies, and they weren't your parents paid $25 for you to be on the team trophies. They were most runs batted in, most baskets scored. You go on my room, on one wall, there were three ribbons, and they were pink, which either means last place or disqualified. I was just bad at everything. And then we were studying the water cycle in our class, and we learned how the sun shines down on the ocean, and some of that water evaporates, and it goes up into the sky, and then that evaporated water collects into clouds, and those clouds blow out over the land, and they get heavy, and the rain comes out of those clouds, and it falls onto the ground. It goes into the creeks and into the rivers, and it refills the ocean. So when it came time for our science project, I decided I was going to do my science project on the water cycle. And I got the bottom half of a turkey roaster and I filled that up with water. And I got a stand and I put a hairdryer on that. And I got a terrarium, which is a fancy word for an upside down fish tank. And I put that over all of that. And I turned the hairdryer on and I made a seascape in the background. And the hot air from the hairdryer evaporated the water. And that water, evaporated water condensed on the top of the terrarium. And the judges came over and I read them my report and I bumped the table. And the idea was that the rain would fall back into the water source. And the hairdryer fell into the water. And the lights went out in the county. And I did not win. This was just exemplary of my life, and I would go home, and I would cry. I was a little kid, and I would cry, and I'm the last of five children, and I don't know if you're the last of a long line of children, but if you are, you know that your parents really just don't care that much anymore. My mom's sympathy tank was empty. That's all there was to it. No, my mother, wonderful mother, she would come in, and she would say, "What's wrong?" And I would say, "I'm awful at everything. I lose everything. I'm not good at anything. I'm never going to change the world." Now, I don't know why at seven I thought that I needed to change the world, but it was in my head, and that's what I was fixated on. And Mom would say to me, "Listen, most people who change the world never intended to change the world. They were just trying to fix one little thing over here or accomplish one little goal, and as a result, they changed the world." And so she would list people like Martin Luther, who just wanted to fix some things in the church, and then Rosa Parks didn't know that she was going to set off an international civil rights movement. And then she named people like Chuck Yeager, because we're from West Virginia and you have to name Chuck Yeager. And she said Chuck Yeager didn't set out to break the speed of sound. He was just trying to get out of Hamlin, West Virginia. And then, you know, Harvey Milk and Freddie Mercury. My mother did not say Harvey Milk or Freddie Mercury. But she said that most people were just trying to do something else, and I don't know if it worked, but I know it made me fall asleep, and so in that sense, it did make me feel better. Now, every year, my family would go to Maine on vacation. We would get in the car. We had a Pontiac station wagon, a Pontiac Grand Safari station wagon. And in that car, in the front seat, would be my father, my mother, and Grosspapa, my grandfather. And then in the next seat, there was my brother Paul, my sister Tammy, and my brother Kevin. No, that's wrong. My brother Paul, my Amma, my grandmother, and then my brother Kevin. And the back end of that car was about half as long as this room and twice as wide. And my mother put a 1-inch foam rubber pad back there. And in the back there was myself, my sister Tammy, my sister Katie, my buddy Skeeter, and Deacon, the dog. So there were there were 10 people and a dog in a car that had more cigarette lighters than seatbelts. And we rode this way 21 hours all the way to Maine, us in the back, out of reach of the adults, not that they could reach us anyway, and not that they were going to bother to look anyway. We'd go to the back tailgate window, it would roll down, and we would put our bodies out of it and play a game, who can be the last person to leave the state? Hold my ankles. And the cars behind us, honk, honk, honk. Those kids are having a great time. And we stopped at a rest stop, and everybody went to the bathroom. And when we got back to the cars, I climbed in the back window because I didn't want to climb over everybody. And I made contact with Dad and Grosspapa in the rearview mirror. And my sister Tammy had switched places with my brother Kevin, so he was now in the back seat, or in the back area. And I was tired, so I pulled a blanket over myself, and we pulled out. And we got 15 minutes down the road, and my sister Tammy said, "Oh no, I think we left Bill at the rest stop." And Grosspapa, this is, you need to understand Grosspapa. Grosspapa said, "I told him if he didn't hurry, we would leave him." And my dad said, "We'll pick him up on the way home." And my mom said, "John." And my dad said, "He'll be fine." And then my sister was hysterical. And 20 minutes later, when she was about to pass out, I'm here. I was here the whole, oh, great family memories. And then we finally got to Maine. We're crossing the bay in a ferry boat. Grosspapa's standing on the dock looking at the water. Not the dock, but standing at the railing looking at the water. And there were these brightly colored buoys floating. They were lobster buoys, but I didn't know that then. And I said to Grosspapa, "What are those buoys?" And he said, "Those mark the places where all the other ferries sank." This is so beautiful. And then we got to the cabin. We'd been in the car, 10 people and a dog for 21 hours. Skeeter and I went running down to the North Atlantic Ocean. Our parents were like, go play in the ocean, unsupervised. You'll be fine. And Grosspapa came down not to watch us, just to get out of work. And we went running into the ocean, and it was ice. I don't know if you've ever been in the North Atlantic Ocean, but even in July, it's 57 degrees colder than the bottom of Lake Superior in December. By the end of that trip, I was blue from the knees down, and I was white from the knees to my hips where my trunks had been, and then I was bright red from my waist to the top of my head. I looked like a patriotic rocket popsicle. And Grosspapa said, "Is the water cold?" And we said, "Yes, the water's cold." And he said, "You have to acclimate yourself." And we said, "What does that mean?" He said, "You have to put your whole body in the water, and then your body will get used to being cold. You won't even notice it." So we went in the water, and we dove down, and we came back. And he said, "Are you still cold?" And we said, "Yes." And he said, "Did you open your eyes?" And we said, "No." And he said, "Well, you have to open your eyes to acclimate yourselves." So we went out, and we sunk, and we opened our eyes, and we came back, and he said, "Are you warm?" And we said, "No." And he said, "Did you open your eyes?" And we said, "Yes." And he said, "What happened?" And I said, "It burned." And he said, "Yeah, that's because it's salt water." And Skeeter said, "And it was dark." And Grosspapa said, "Do you know why it's dark?" And we said, "No." And he said, "Because the sunlight can only penetrate so deep in the ocean. It can only go down so far." And Skeeter said, "Now hold on a second. When I go to the swimming pool, I can see all the way to the bottom of the deep end." And Grosspapa said, "That's because that's fresh water, but this is salt water, and it's denser, so the light can't penetrate as deep because it's light. So it floats." He said, if you go deep enough in the ocean, deep down into the ocean, it is so dark that there are creatures who make their own lights. They are bioluminescent creatures. There's a fish called the anglerfish. It's got a lamppost coming right out of the middle of its head, got a little light on the end of it so it can see where it goes. And I said, how deep are these anglerfish? And Gross Papa said, deep. Probably 6 feet. Skeeter and I ran out into the freezing North Atlantic Ocean, dove to the bottom, grabbed rocks so we wouldn't float to the surface, opened our eyes in the burning salt water, and waited for anglerfish to swim by. And this is why adults should lie to children, because a well-qualified adult can manipulate a child into having fun anytime. And then we got out. I told you I was little. We were close to hypothermic. Gross Papa said, here's what I want you to do. Build a dam across this creek. There was a creek coming out of the woods. Build a dam across the creek. The water will stop. The sun will shine down on that water. The water will get warm, and you'll have like a hot tub. So you can go play in the water and then sit in the creek. And sure enough, we built the dam, and the water was warm, and my mother called us for supper, and we ate supper, and we went to bed. And Skeeter and I got to sleep on the screened-in porch. When you're the smallest person in a room, and larger people are telling you, oh, you're so lucky you get to, again, you're being manipulated because you're small and they could move you. But Skeeter and I, and it was a fitful night because of the axe murderers and the werewolves. And we woke up, Gross Papa woke us up at dawn, and he said, boys, I think you're in trouble. We said, what are you talking about? He said, look, I think you broke the ocean. We said, what? And he said, look, and sure enough, yesterday, whereas the water had been like 50 yards from the cabin, now the water was like 100 yards from the cabin. And Gross Papa said, do you know anything about the water cycle? And I said, as a matter of fact, I do know something about the water cycle. Sun shines down on the ocean, the water evaporates, it goes up, it turns into clouds, it flows out over the land, the clouds get heavy, the water falls down, it goes into the creeks refill the ocean. Gross Papa said, yeah, that dam you built on that creek, you stopped the flow of water into the ocean. And that's going to be a tragedy because the ocean will drain, all of the sea life will die, there won't be any transatlantic shipping, and there'll be a drought, and there'll be a famine. And I was like, Gross Papa, there's no way humans could cause that much climate change. But he said, go down there, tear down that dam, let the water flow back into the ocean. Maybe nobody will notice. So we went and we tore it down, and he said, now hide behind this log. I'll sit here and watch to see if the ocean police come by. And we hadn't slept much. We were tired. The adrenaline was fading. We fell asleep. And I don't know how long we slept. But we woke up, and sure enough, the water was about where it had been yesterday. And Gross Papa said, I think it's working. The water's coming back up, but do you remember exactly where it was? And we said, no. He said, I think it's higher. I think you're letting too much water into the ocean. And if that happens, you're going to flood Maine. And that's bad because Maine is north and north is up. And if you flood Maine, that's just all that water is going to bottleneck down through New England into the continental southern United States. There's going to be a tremendous flood. You got to get the creek flowing just like it was flowing yesterday. So there we were, 2 7-year-olds trying to be hydrologists. My mother caught us. We ate supper. We went to bed. Gross Papa woke us up. Boys, whatever you did, it didn't work. Sure enough, the water was away again. He said, the only thing I can think of is displacement. If you take rocks and start throwing them into the ocean, maybe you can displace enough water. The water will rise. It's like when you get in a bathtub, it's half full, but you get in it and the water rises. There's no more water, but the water rises. That's called displacement. He said, if you throw enough rocks into the ocean, maybe you can displace enough water that the ocean police won't notice that it's draining. And we threw rocks until we couldn't move our right arms. And then we threw rocks until we couldn't move our left arms. And then we were kicking rocks, and the water was coming up. It was working. And Gross Papa said, I think you threw too many rocks. You need to build a seawall. And so we were there building a seawall along the ocean. And we heard my parents coming down the beach. And you're probably thinking to yourself, where have they been for 2 days? I don't know. And my mother said, what are you doing? And it all broke. And I said, we broke the ocean. And my dad said, oh, no. We better hide you away in the basement till after the ocean police come. And my mom said, John. And he said, what? Then we'll just ship them away to Timbuktu. And my mother said, John. And Dad and Gross Papa. Gross Papa was Dad's dad, in case you haven't figured that out. Gross Papa and Dad started walking away, and my mom knelt down between me and Skeeter. And she said, listen, there's no doubt that the two of you are good at breaking things. But I don't even think the two of you could break the ocean. She said, you guys don't know anything about the tides, do you? No, I grew up in West Virginia. The freshest seafood I ever had was canned salmon. And so she said, listen, most of the earth is water, and the sun and the moon, they have their gravitation, and the gravitational forces of those two bodies, they pull on everything on the earth all day long, but the only thing that moves is water because it's fluid, and the sun is way more massive than the moon, but the moon is closer, and proximity is power, and all day long, the moon's gravity pulls on the water of the earth, and whatever side the moon is on, a whole bunch of water goes and just forms like a big cone, a big inverted bowl in the middle of the ocean, and when your part of the world goes under, goes through that water, you either get low tide or you get high tide. She said, this just happens. It's happened every day for as long as the earth has been here. She said, listen, the ocean has tremendous power. It has the potential to change the world. She said, a hurricane can blow on the ocean, and that water will go in and can wipe out half of a country. Or there can be an earthquake on one side of the world that will cause a tsunami that will go and wipe out an island on the other side of the world. Or the water in the ocean can freeze so quickly that it can just crush a ship. And I was like, how is this supposed to be making me feel better? And she said, the ocean has the power to change the world. She said, but you two, even though you are indescribably less massive than the ocean, she said, you two, small as you are actually more powerful than the ocean. Because for the ocean to change the world, some other force has to act upon it. But you two can decide to change the world. And then she turned and she walked away. And Skeeter and I stood there staring at the ocean. And after a minute, I turned to go. And Skeeter said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to change the world. And he said, how are you going to do that? And I said, I'm going to get a hair dryer and an extension cord. Thank you very much.
That was Bill Lepp. With Bill and Skeeter, Break the Ocean. You know, listening to the stories on the Appleseed sometimes takes me to places I don't expect to go. And Bill's wonderful, funny story took me to kind of a serious, even tough memory that I'll try to be careful in talking about. But I want to share it with you. It's a memory about deciding to make a difference, just like Bill's mother taught him that he and Skeeter could. There was a time many years ago when I taught school in a medium-sized town. I say a medium-sized town, but it really felt like a small town. It seemed like everyone knew each other and mostly cared for each other, even though, of course, there were divisions and boundaries between the folks in town that kept them separate, like boundaries can, political or religious or societal boundaries. And it was an enormous shock to the whole town when one day there was news that a tiny child, newborn, had been abandoned and had perished overnight before it was found by one of the city police officers, a little boy. It was a tragedy that rocked all of us. How could such a thing happen in our town? I mean, you can imagine the talk that accompanied the spread of that horrible news. None of us knew how to adequately respond to what had happened, but it was on all of our minds. It was on the minds of my students. And I had a student who came to me after class in the middle of all that, and she said, I think I'd like to organize a funeral for that child. And she wondered if I could help her decide who she might call. Well, together we called the police department. The police wanted to be part of it. They helped my student make some of the necessary arrangements. And then we called the local funeral home, and they donated all their services. Of course they did, a tiny casket, everything. And they arranged for the city to donate a cemetery plot, which the city was happy to do. And the clergy at the local Catholic church wanted to be involved, and so did the clergy at the Presbyterian church, and their congregations wanted to be involved. And the student at the center of it all managed the organization of what had pretty soon become quite a large community event. She asked those clergymen to speak at the funeral. She asked me to speak at the funeral. She organized music. She invited the whole town police force. They had really been most closely impacted by this tiny passing. And those police officers all came to the funeral in their uniforms, and they brought an enormous stuffed bear to place on the tiny casket. And there were mountains of flowers, and the whole community was there across religious and political and social boundaries. That little funeral was on the television news all over the state, and it made for a lot of healing, a lot of coming together in the face of a very difficult time that had rocked us, that had confused us. And at the center of it all was this student of mine who had simply, after class, decided to make a difference. We will, all of us who were part of that story, remember the difference that student made for the rest of our lives. Sometimes you may not feel like you can do much, but it doesn't take much to be the kind of help in the world that can be memorable forever to the people who needed the help. And that's, perhaps unusually, where Bill's story, the wisdom of Bill's mother in that story, took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? Our next story is more lighthearted, perhaps, than what you just heard. It's about the phases of the moon. Storyteller Dovey Thomason shares this native folk tale, where even the smallest of creatures has an impact on something enormous. The story is called Mice and the Moon. Here's Dovey Thomason.
It was the custom of the animal people to gather every year at the same season and tell stories. They would come together and they would tell stories, but they would be the stories of their own people, their ancestry, their beginnings, their memories, their dreamings. And they would each stand and speak, and they would speak of all their ancestors, all the generations, all the land, all the memories. And then they would smile, all would give them great respect, and another would stand. And so that had been going on for day after day, and then they were just about ready to end as all things end, with a feast, which is exactly how all things begin. And so they had begun with a feast, and now all had told their stories, and now they were all told, and they were ready to feast again when they were interrupted by a voice, a small voice from a small being. It was a little mouse who said, excuse me? What? About me? What about my people? They told me you were rude. They told me you would ignore me because I was small. They told me you would not listen to the stories of my people because we've not been here that long. You do not know our stories, and you would not, you disrespect me. You should be ashamed. And that is when all of the animals started bowing their heads in shame. But you know, it wasn't just shame that had them bowing their heads. They were hiding the rage that was in some of their faces because, honestly, you do not shame other people the way that mouse had just acted. That is disrespectful as well. And so the bear had his head bowed, but he said to his friend the wolf, I'm going to kill him, and then I'm going to eat him. And the wolf said, not if I get there first. There will be nothing left for you. And the owl said, ha-ha, I am faster and see better than either of you. I will get him before you. And then the bear said, wait. We should let him tell his story first. Otherwise, it is disrespectful. All right, let him speak. Then we eat him. Speak, mouse. And the mouse said,
my people are not from Earth. We do not call this Earth Mother. We are from the moon. It is the moon that we call mother. We were made to be on the moon, and some of us live there still, for this is the story of my people. We were given great gifts. We were given the gifts of holding on. We can hold on to a great spinning object like our mother, the moon. And as we hold on, we have another gift. We have these teeth, sharp little teeth that can nibble and peel, and we peel back the silver crust that covers our mother's face. We nibble and peel and push back the crust of our mother, the moon, in a great line. We do this, and we do pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back. You will see it every night from here where you are. We cannot see it as you did. And still we did it perfectly, didn't we? And my relatives, they do it perfectly still. How am I here to tell this story? Well, you see, I'm sorry, there was a day someone in that great line across our mother's face turned to a neighbor and spoke instead of worked. It was a time for doing a simple thing, nibbling and peeling and nibbling and peeling. By nibbling and peeling, we remove the crust of the earth, of the moon. And when the moon's crust is removed, then it is dark and the moon can rest. A mother needs rest. If we do not remove that silver crust, she can never rest. She will weary. She will age. You don't want that for your mother. But on this day, someone grew careless, turned to someone beside them and said something, maybe a joke. Maybe gossip, maybe something personal, maybe something boring, something meaningless. And the other one listened instead of doing what she was supposed to do. And so she bit through the crust of our mother into her flesh, and it hurt. Mothers are used to pain. And so she bare twitched when that little one bit through. But some of the mice, their paws sensitive enough and strong enough to hold on to a great spinning object, felt that movement in our mother, the moon, and they lost their balance just a bit, and they turned to each other and said, "What was that?" And they turned back, and now another nicked and nibbled, slashed and cut with those sharp, sharp teeth. The flesh of our mother was getting bitten and gouged and torn until she could not handle the pain. She shuddered greatly under the pain of so many careless mice. And they gripped tighter, which made her shake and shudder greater. And the mice began being thrown into the air off the face of our mother, the moon. They fell through the sky. Many, many, many died. Many landed here, where I find myself. I am descended from those ones, whether I am of one who fell or one who but survived or the child. It is all the great story shared by all of the mice people. You see, some still survive. Still, the moon's crust is moved back night by night until our mother can rest. But still, you look at our mother, and now there are scars on her face, where her children, the mice, were careless of their gifts and the one task they were meant to do. So, well, that is my story. Now I'm finished.
"I'm going to eat him," said the wolf. And lunged for him, and the owl said, "Oh, not going to beat me," and swooped. But the bear said, "Oh, I got this," and with a great paw swept up that mouse, and that mouse jumped from his paw to his shoulder. And the bear slapped at his shoulder, but the mouse ran across his back. And the bear grabbed at his other shoulder, but the mouse ran across his belly, and it slapped at himself, but the mouse was around his back. And he spun around grabbing at himself and slapping himself until finally he fell on the ground laughing.
"I like the little guy, I gotta tell you. He spoke the truth. He has the power to not fall off of a great spinning object. I will eat anything, but I will not eat mice."
And so it was. It is true from that day to this. Bears, who will eat anything? Don't eat mice. Wolves and owls, on the other hand, will eat them every chance they get. But I was told, and so I'll tell you, if you find a mouse in your house, remember, they're not from here. And the gifts they were given don't seem helpful here. But they are new. They are still trying to find a way to be on this sweet earth. Thank you.
That was Dovie Thomason with Mice and the Moon. Have you ever wondered if you could make a difference in the world around you? Have you ever tried to do something that made a difference and succeeded? Was there a time you succeeded in making a difference, even though you felt small? Have you ever had an impact you didn't intend to have on something? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. We want to thank Bill Lepp and Dovie Thomason for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. From parenting tips to overcoming personal hardships, join Lisa Valentine Clark on the BYU Radio podcast, The Lisa Show, where she'll help you take a good look at life, wherever you get your podcasts.